Good morning, everybody. Today, we have an unfiltered finance, a person who's very active in the private fund industry, has been, happens to also be a friend of mine, shockingly. His name is Jason McClinsky, and obviously my co-host, John D'Agostino, who's a little under the weather. He had a touch and go with life. He might have seen a few moments flash behind, in front of his eyes. One on an IV was in the hospital.
John, by the way, changed man, Ron.
You look, but you and Jason could talk about your near death life experiences that you've shared. So
the
anyway,
question is for better or for worse, but yes,
I would say for better, since I know both of you quite a long time. The world's a better place for both of you in it. So, so Jason, why don't you give us some background for your role within the private fund industry for people who may not be familiar with the industry or you?
Sure. Thanks, Ron. And thanks, John. My role in the private funds universe is as chief revenue officer of a firm who, as of yesterday, was called IDR, and now today is renamed and rebranded legally to Sonata One. And what Sonata One, in a nutshell, Sonata signifies harmony, and one means one single point of connectivity. And really what we claim to do, it's not theory, we do it, is harmonize the way LPs subscribe and invest into private funds. And so in the private funds ecosystem generally, when investors come into private funds, they're going through an administrator, or, and hang on to this word, administrators, because most of the large GPs have multiple administrators. And what we do in its most simplistic form is act as a hub or a community where over 55 or 56,000 rapidly growing LPs are matched through Sonata One's hub to approximately 6,200 private funds. And what that really means in its most simplistic form, that whether Ron Geffner, John D'Agostino, or a pension fund, when they go to subscribe into that fund, normally you're performing KYC activity in multiple forms across multiple jurisdictions. We make it so that each and every investor has one approved passport that's good for many investments within funds. So if you think about where we fit in, we're the gateway and also the life cycle provider to investors and GPs. And so essentially we end up being a firewall. So if just pick on Ares, pick on an Apollo, any large GP only has to send their LP investors to us, not to multiple administrators. For new funds in the private funds ecosystem, the beauty of using Sonata One is that once you launch your first fund, the irony is that I probably already have approved the LPs you're talking to out in the marketplace because they're in other GPs in my ecosystem. When you go to launch fund two, three, so on and so forth, I've already got your initial vintage of investors approved. But moreover, anyone you're talking to vintage two is probably on my platform. And then we're just happy to carry them through KYC, the subscription process, all the tax forms that are so important to be filed correctly. And soon at the end of 2025, because we've applied for broker-dealer license here and an application in with the CSSF, is I become an exchange. Sonata One becomes the private funds marketplace because I can facilitate the movement of capital, primary and secondary investing, and all the life cycle events that come with that. So capital calls, distribution notices, all of your NAVs, which really leaves the administrators to handle what they do best, which is accounting work, and Sonata One being the hub where investors come through, the one point of connectivity.
Okay. Well, let's just, because not everyone who watches this podcast or listens to this podcast is going to be financially familiar with private funds. Let's just cover some definitions. So GPs, general partners, generally that means the fund, the management of
Correct.
The fund. LPs, limited partners, those are just investors. AML, KYC, this is the know your customer, anti-money laundering. These are all the processes you have to do to invest. And for some listeners, they may not be aware. They may think, okay, a wealthy individual wants to invest in the type of investment that's limited to wealthy individuals. These are generally called accredited or qualified investments, that it's a relatively painless process. In reality, there's hundreds of pages of documentation. There's an extensive process they have to go through, which shockingly, even in 2025, is very manual. In addition, Jason, as you pointed out, you can make the same type of investment. So an LP, an investor, can invest in 100 GPs or funds and have to fill out that paperwork 100 times. Even if you're doing it with the same bank, even if it's the same administrator, it is a shockingly manual, archaic process. And so my first question for you, Jason, Ron, I hope I'm not stepping on your toes here. But just to
Why should today be any different than any other day, my friend?
You have no toes left. Ron has no toes left.
I'm stubby.
So I'm going to speak for Ron here, because I'm sure he's going to agree with me on this. Ron and I have been doing this for a long time. It is just shocking to me that nobody's figured out how to do this.
Well, first of all, this has been discussed. Yeah. This has been discussed for years.
Yeah.
About a global passport that an accredited investor or qualified client or qualified purchaser, all are defined terms that signify the type of wealth that an investor represents. And it has yet to come to pass, but for Sonata One. Yeah.
Not even, Jason, that's all on you. I want to get your understanding. I want to hear from you as to why you think it hasn't happened and why you're different. But just one more point. Not only has it not happened across the industry, it hasn't even happened within a given administrator. I am invested in multiple funds, and I won't name it, call anybody out, but with a huge, massively sophisticated, the biggest in the world. And every time I invest, I have to go through the same. I'm like, guys, you have my information already. Like, I did this with you literally 2 weeks ago.
John, so, I'm a lawyer, and I draft these documents, and they're not all drafted the same, and they're very confusing. And the questions are not always applicable to the situation, leaving the subscriber to have to interpret on their own or bother somebody on how to.
It's bananas nuts. So let's start with Jason. Why is it like this still?
So the reality.
Why are you different?
The reality is it is happening. And it's if you think about the flywheel effect, it's picking up steam. And we've been doing it for over, as Sonata One or IDR in its past form, for over 7 years. But the reality is the group that manages Sonata One was previously at a fund administrator, and this business lifted out of one. And so it's been occurring, and hence why if you look at the trajectory of our client base growth, it grows at over 50% a year. The reality is not everyone has adopted it, because our implementation for general partners or the fund is different in different cases, right? Because our service is modular, you can take either KYC and subscription, you could only engage us to do the W forms, but we're driving the revolution behind getting to a place where you're clicking what we call a buy button and transacting through your passport, through subscription, tax forms flowing. The reality is it exists, but for large GPs to adopt changing this paradigm requires a measured implementation, because usually the average fund over, call it $3, $4 billion, is using 2 to 3 administrators. To pull the plug on all of them once is an implementation nightmare, almost negates the pain that you're causing. However, with numbers like 55, 56,000 LPs on our platform, in our community, and over 6,000 funds, it's got significant traction. And if you look at who our client base is, the adoption is broad-based. It's funds that are $50 million and funds that are $100 billion. The real issue is getting the GP to understand the real magic behind what Sonata One does for investing, for you and for a pension fund. When a general partner comes to us to see what value we can provide to their LPs, one of the first things we actually ask them is to see their LP list. And they're shocked when we come back and say, we have 92% of your LPs already passported, because they're in many other GPs. So it's happening. The administrators generally balk at using someone like us because they already have this function embedded in their service offering and they're charging for it.
So let's pause right there. So let's pause right there, because you're giving a lot of information. I'm sorry to have interrupted you. Why don't you explain to the audience, since you have worked both in prime brokerage and in administration, what the role is of an administrator, and then what role you now play as it relates to an administrator, so maybe they can understand both sides of the coin and make the assessment themselves before they get bad data from an administrator who tries to poo-poo what you're doing.
Sure. So an administrator generally exists for a few different things. One is to actually, on behalf of the general partner, the fund, vet whatever investor they are trying to bring into the fund. So the first step of what an administrator does, for lack of a better word, is make sure that Vladimir Putin's nephew is not investing into John D'Agostino's fund, therefore tainting the capital base.
I mean, that was 6 months ago, Jason. Maybe today they'd be welcome with open arms. Yeah, open arms.
You never know, right? Like, who
he's got
I,
good but, legal counsel.
And maybe that was the wrong example personally, but the point is making sure that checking source of funds, making sure you are who you are and that you're actually qualified to be in that vehicle. Once that's done, the next sort of next task and responsibility of an administrator is to set up the fund structure in accounting systems and then book whatever assets that fund owns. So if it was a hedge fund, it might be publicly traded securities, privates, it might be derivatives. And then if it's a closed-ended fund where it's like a middle market buyout fund, it's memorializing the fact that Geffner Capital lent $50 million to a private company and here are the terms of the loan, and then generate all the life cycle events around that asset. So accounting entries, accruals, all things that lead to a monthly or a quarterly valuation called a net asset value statement that tells the investor, here's how much capital you put in. Here was the activity of the fund throughout the period. Here's what the fund made or lost. And here's minus any capital you took out. And here's what your investment is now worth. And so that happens either quarterly or monthly. And then if a fund on the closed end side were to call more capital, the administrator would issue those capital calls to you, reconcile back to the fund that, hey, the $100 million you just called has now all been received, and then let that fund know that they've successfully closed that life cycle event.
And Jason, not to state the obvious, but all of the key element of this from the investor's point of view is all of this is done by an independent entity. The administrator is fully independent of the fund manager. So when the investor gets that statement, they have some confidence that the fund is not a fraud.
Correct. And so the Madoff scandal spurred a lot of private funds to go get a third party administrator. That said, people would be shocked if I told them that almost 20 to 25% of the private funds universe is still self-administered. And by that, John, it means they have a staff of accountants in their back office. They have people doing it.
Are you slanting that between private equity and hedge?
I'm saying global.
Yeah, because isn't their number greater? It's less in the open end hedge fund community and greater in the closed end private equity, venture capital, real estate fund community. Those are more likely to be self-administrated than a hedge fund.
That's correct. And so when we look at who's a viable customer for Sonata One, we instinctively point our arrow towards the ones that are self-administered because the trend is changing, that's no longer best practice. The investor onboarding component tends to be the most cumbersome and time consuming for a general partner because you're fighting the same issues about jurisdiction, KYC, it's time consuming. You're spending a lot of time with your outside counsel getting through subscription documents. But nevertheless, there is still a 20 to 25% contingent in the funds universe that still have fairly large teams. By that, I mean over 10 people administering their own fund internally, which is not the way I believe it's supposed to be, not because I represent an investor onboarding service. I just see that if you're an LP, the administrator works for you, theoretically, not for the fund.
I can't believe any of those funds have institutional investors in them. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought those days were, you know, two decades in the past, but it's possible. It's possible.
That said, if you look at the pedigree of who's doing the self-administration, they're not the you know, banner name general partners that we're all familiar with. A lot of them, frankly, John, are funds that have been in business. They're, if it's on the closed end side, they maybe have four or five funds and they've been in business as an entity for like 20 years. They've got teams that are in place that they're either at the end of their investing period and the GPs know that in 3 years, they're going to return all the capital because there's not that much work to do on the administration effort. Once you're fully invested and you're harvesting, it's a lot quarterly reporting.
Well, look, we also know commercially, and we'll get to what Sonata One is doing, but it's also from a legal perspective, it's not only in the investor's best interest on some level, or in a lot of level, but it's also in the manager's best interest for a range of reasons as well. And in particular, they take an expense that's otherwise a management expense and move it to a fund expense. So it's not even, it's actually increasing their personal cash flow. Right. So for a range of reasons, everybody should be doing that. Now, walk through, you're saying administrators are doing this already on some level, but they're not doing it in the way that you're doing it. So walk us through why I assume an administrator would be reticent to let you in because they're worried about giving up the cash flow to you. Why would they push back on this?
So they push back because of the obvious is that we're taking annual recurring revenue from their pocket. The reality is out of the top 10 administrators that do this for their GP clients, there are probably half of them where we supply KYC passports to them on behalf of LPs in their clients, because the LP has said, why am I doing KYC through you, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Administrator, when I have an IDR passport, will you take it? Not dissimilar to a comfort letter.
I don't want a passport. IDR no longer is that name.
Right, yeah. So, well, it's only been like 5 hours, so I'm bound to make a few mistakes over this week.
What are friends for?
Exactly. So the reality is we pass Sonata One passports to administrators. What's more interesting to me is the sheer number of middle market fund administrators that have approached us because they subscribe to our vision to embed Sonata One in their four walls as their investor onboarding service. Because remember, we're not technology only. Technology supports the process by digitizing the subbook, handling the KYC passport, producing the W forms. Sonata One has over 120 people globally. Our service centers out of Cape Town, South Africa, and they work in 24-hour rotating shifts. So three shifts a day, staffed by lawyers who are able to deal with the LPs and the GP's outside fund counsel if there's something regarding the subscription document. So we don't leave people to their own devices. So if you're a fund administrator that's looking to grow quickly, rather than staff out your own team and have to arbitrate different jurisdictions and LPs who may not be as sophisticated as an LP interacting with a CITGO because they're a pension fund or a sovereign, where some of these administrators' clients are, you know, for lack of a better word, the retired dentist in Wichita, Kansas, who is wondering why you're asking him for a copy of your passport. If we get involved early and you get a human on a Teams call or a Zoom call with that individual and spend the 10 minutes to walk them through the questionnaire and say, look, the reason why we are asking you for your passport is twofold. We need to make sure you are who you are. And B, I promise you, once you give that to us, we're never going to ask you for it again unless it's expired and our system's going to automatically remind you to re-upload. So after the first interaction, if they don't want to talk to anyone, they don't have to. And again, at its root, we are a fund expense. So the way we charge is not dissimilar to how an administrator charges for KYC. We charge the same way. Per LP, per fund, per year for the life of the fund. That's the same way a GP is used to getting billed for the KYC and investor onboarding portion of an overall administration agreement. So the tide is shifting where the administrators aren't so terrified about speaking with us because there are things we do that make what they do better.
So there's a few things. One, so from an investor standpoint, ideally you become the only touch point at the very beginning. And as your platform grows, that becomes more and more self-fulfilling. Two, yes. And I'm going to read into some things you said, so apologies if I get it wrong, and feel free to correct. But I take it that the smaller and middle market administrators are going to welcome you because you're accretive to their growth, because they don't have to invest hard dollars to provide the services in return for what you're doing, and you're still leaving other business for them to do, and you're already doing it anyway for other administrators behind the scenes. Now, for the large administrators, they've already got in the built-in processes. They're probably going to push back for a period of time until you become more and more of what the industry standard is.
So you're correct, except for the last statement you make.
Okay.
In that we are presently the investor onboarding service for several GPs that are household names. And they're on our website, so it's public information. People like Hamilton Lane, Stepstone, Hellman and Friedman, who have recognized that what we do, the large GPs have so many funds and a concentrated LP base. So if, and I tell this to large GPs when we go see them, is you need look nowhere else, because for your LP investors, IDR's Sonata One, sorry, he got me again, is already their home address. They've been here before they found you. So why would you go anywhere else? And frankly, we are very relaxed. And this, I think, is driven predominantly by our founder, Tim Andrews, about embedding Sonata One within someone's infrastructure and having it look and feel 100% like the GP's infrastructure, graphics, skin, things of that nature. We're absolutely relaxed about making it look as if it was there all along. Go ahead.
Did I cut you off from finishing, or are you just?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so John's running a fund. He's on fund two or fund three, and Sonata's getting involved now in the new fund that he's launching. How does it appear to him and to his investors from like this? How does it affect the subscription documents?
So there are subscription documents from fund one, obviously. We can do one of two things. We can simply ignore them and move forward on fund two, or what's more efficient for fund two, fund three, so on and sequential, is we take the subscription documents from fund one and the LPs he has, and we give those LPs a passport to the extent they didn't have one. We then
Do you have to contact them again, like to get their passports, or you're assuming the file's complete?
Generally, 75% of those LPs will already be here. And then we're just linking them to John's fund. To the extent they're not on Sonata One, we will look in the public domain and fill out the passport application as extensively as we can. So when the LP gets to the passport application, they're almost all already done, if you think about it. So we do that.
So if they come back and visit, so it's a little like CIA-ish. And if they come back and visit.
Very much.
You're going to come back then on fund two, you'd be like, okay, Mr. Smith, we have all your information, but we do need the following data that's incomplete based on your prior investment.
And we will only show them what is incomplete. So they're not cycling through a 10-page application. When it comes to the subscription document, if we onboard the Fund 1 docs, we will look for any information in those subbooks that was completed outside what we can already get from the KYC application. Digitize Fund 2, take everything out of the passport, populate the subbook, create a condensed version that only really gets to reps and warranties, and then we insert our language, and essentially the LP is at a 90% completed subscription book.
So every time, wait, pause, because you keep going into deep data. So you get into the representations and warranties. In those, for example, if I was managing a hedge fund and I had allocations into initial public offerings, I need to know which of my investors are what are referred to as restricted persons versus non-restricted, which means do you work for a bank? Basically, are you at a job where you can have influence and create a conflict? And so I presume those representations and warranties upon each investment, the investor reaffirms nothing's changed with their employment or that of anybody in their household.
That's correct. There is functionality in the subscription book module that allows for that declaration. And so we're indifferent as to who drafts the subscription booklet. We simply digitize. And unlike some of the fund administrators, we generally digitize in about 4 days. It's not a very lengthy process. And the system is also has, so you have to think about it, leaving an LP who's not a pensioner, an endowment, to a subscription document with little or no support around it is treacherous. It almost defeats what we do. So in the user interface exists a chat function, and the response time is generally about 3 to 4 minutes, where they actually have access to a fund closing lawyer on our team in Cape Town with questions. Outside counsel, so let's say if someone's using Sadis, drafted their subbook, the LP has a question, our attorney is not sure what the actual appropriate answer is or what the context is, there are means to enable someone on your team, Ron, to interact with a Sonata One fund counsel in Cape Town and resolve the issue live. And that's something that's a bit of an anomaly in a, you know, in a world where people are, large GPs are spending millions of dollars to draft subbooks and close funds. We have fund closing teams with dashboard support. So John, the general partner, is raising $250 million across 70 LPs. We can give him at any moment's notice, red, amber, green, how far along to closing are you? Are there any LPs who haven't submitted something? Down to, we can tell you how long someone's been in your subscription book and how long they stopped at a certain section. So right, okay.
So Jason, question for both you and Ron. These subbooks, these subscription documents that govern these investments into funds, there's a million different versions. They're very, very varied. But if we were to extract, if we were to take 100 of these and just literally extract the information being asked of the investor and dump that into an Excel spreadsheet, I would think that's got to be like 98% consistent. Yes or no, Ron? Like the types of information that you need as a private fund to get from your investor.
Hey, Jason's going to have a more technical answer because he's got greater access to data.
What do you think, Jason?
Let me get a guess.
Yeah.
My instinct is, while a lot of it might ultimately be the same thing, the challenge is the questions are asked differently by different firms, and sometimes it's more confusing, sometimes it's not. But okay. 85%, 90% crossover of data.
Yes, I would agree. In the end, I feel as if, and this is not to denigrate the profession or what have you, but a lot of these fund counsel have either been at several firms, and there sort of permeates, and Ron, it'd be great to hear your opinion, is if you've been working at two or three mid to large size private funds, law firms, you've probably seen all the flavors of what a subscription doc looks like. But in the end, and maybe it's an overgeneralization, they really seek to get someone to agree to terms and conditions of giving a general partner money. Meaning how long you're giving someone money for, what the structure of the waterfall is, what are your rights about redemption, et cetera, return of capital, and what the GP can and cannot do with your money. I mean, I'm a country lawyer, but it feels like I've read enough of them to know what you're really signing when you're gifted a subscription book.
By the way, I've heard Jason say he's the country lawyer to friendly police officers, not where he's having a conflict with them, because we're in a conversation. So he drops that in quite a bit, which is why I laugh a lot.
Well, I like words like for the avoidance of doubt or whereas,
I'm sure they love that, right? That's great. Some Wall Street asshole just speaking down to them. That's charming, Jason. I'm sure
they love that.
The reason I was getting to this is I agree with you. I agree. There's a million permutations how the lawyers design it. Everyone has to earn their dinner. I get that. But we're probably right that about 90% or more of the information being asked that's required to be asked of an LP is probably fairly consistent. And yet
it is, but the problem is the questions are confusing. Yes. And it's as if the person who wrote it hasn't taken the time to try and actually complete the form. I think one of the new homework assignments I should do is ask every one of our lawyers, here's a sub doc. Do me a favor and try and complete one.
Fill it out. See if you can do it. Yeah.
So that there's greater empathy. But the reality is the law doesn't make it easy, because sometimes most non-lawyers, except for Jason, think that the law is a black and white experience, and it's not. It's many, many shades of gray. And so the problem is, depending on your read, depending on the law firm, depending on time and history, depending on the asset class, a range of different things, the questions get asked differently. But the reality is also, most lawyers have seen other lawyers' work product, and it's always about building a better mousetrap. And the reality is, there's really been a lot of integration of ideas. And so most documents are going to reflect at least 90% or more of the same questions. The question we get a lot is, well, we want a shorter subdoc. Not a lot, but we used to get that more. That thankfully seems to have quieted down. But as the law's getting more, well, prior to the Trump administration, the law appearing has gotten more complex. I'm not really sure what will occur over the next 4 years, as we, I imagine, see a de-emphasis on federal regulation and its involvement in what is perceived as private matters.
Right. And look, as a former fund manager, as a director, there's really no motivation for a GP, the owner of a fund, to minimize that process. Even if the investor complains about it, no one's going to perform due diligence on an investment. Again, these are generally investments that you're investing a minimum $150,000 to $200,000 in. Usually it's much higher. No one's going to go through that process, whether they're a high net worth person or a professional investment firm, and then not invest because they get a complex sub-doc. They're going to moan and bitch and whatnot, but I've never met a fund manager that said, the reason I can't raise capital is my documents are too complicated. However, it is absolutely a pain point for a large GP, a large investor, like the ones you mentioned, Jason, when they're dealing with hundreds of investors. They don't want to keep answering those calls saying, your sub-doc's a pain, what's going on? So I can see them saying, look, you can solve this for us. Make this seamless. Beautiful. We love it. Go do it. That's great. I can see a large administrator being threatened by this because they're like, wait a second. We think we're great. We have our own technology. But the reality is that administrator is going to be working with funds and will not be touching every investor. And if you can come to them and say, we have a massive database of investors, it'll make your process so much easier. I could see small administrators saying, we're going to outsource all this shit to you, and we're just going to focus on being the accounting firm, and that's how we're going to grow our business. All of that makes perfect sense to me. So I guess I go back to my original question, which is, why hasn't SS&C done this? Why hasn't Citgo done this? Because they haven't, by the way. They haven't. I'm invested in multiple funds at these shops, and they asked me for all my information again, as if they've never met me before after 20 years. So I want to get to, like,
maybe it's really
why
because they actually
fail?
Do know you.
Obviously, you guys are doing well. That's great. But what is the blockage here that's causing everyone to have to re-ask for information? Oh, is it because their reading of the law is, I have to get a fresh set of docs every single time, even if I did this last week?
No, they're just not looking from client to client to look at the aggregate data, or at least I don't think they are, but Jason, I'd love to hear your answer.
Yeah, no. So what's mildly puzzling to me is, if a large administrator actually took the time to see the overlap in what LPs we have on the platform, we can supplant like 90, maybe that's a stretch, but a significant portion of their work, because my KYC passport, Sonata One's, on behalf of an LP, is always current, always approved. because we're refreshing every night. When things expire, we chase, and we could hand an administrator a risk rating dashboard that shows them at any given moment, every LP that they support on behalf of their GP clients, where they stand from a risk rating, are their documents current and okay? So with Sonata One, an administrator would have all the time, up to date, internationally to the highest jurisdiction approved passports. At the ready, they would never have to, theoretically, answer an LP's question around why they're doing KYC over and over again, because the reality is they wouldn't have to. Now, what stops that conversation from progressing is that it's a significant revenue stream. Think about it. It's, I don't want to say money for nothing, but for an administrator, they do it once. They're just doing the refresh, and they continually get to harvest that revenue. If it goes away, it implies that the people go away, and then that becomes a business restructuring. Not only just process, but now you're involving people. So we understand why an administrator would not want to engage us fully. That said, there are several large, and by that I mean in the top five, that have had conversations with us about using our subscription tool and not KYC. And so that's the beauty of us being able to take our solution and deliver it modular, is if someone wanted to talk to us about embedding our subscription tool in their workflow, completely fine. There are plenty of administrators that, in addition to their own homegrown subscription tool, also have a third party. And it's generally one of our competitors or a standalone system. So it's not uncommon, Ron, that administrators will use a third party subscription tool. But that is driven by either the GP or LP demanding it. There are some GPs who will just say, you can be my administrator, but the only way I'm letting people subscribe into my fund is if you use firm XYZ's tool, because my LPs are used to it.
At some point, I want to introduce something new, whether we do it now or a little bit later. I want to go into predictions about the industry, short term and long term, from many of our guests. Sure. I think that'll keep it a little, add some new interesting twists to the interviews.
Let's keep it spicy, Ron.
Exactly it, buddy. Are we set for that, or you want to have some background other questions you want to follow up on?
I had a conundrum I wanted to pose to both of you, because this is coming up in my director calls with funds.
It's not uncommon, and it happens regularly. Rachel. Friends.
So you mentioned that part of your job is going to be to update these docs. So one of the bigger issues is we often see, particularly with offshore investors, they just stop providing new docs. They just ignore. And the rule of thumb, so obviously that's a breach of AML. It's a breach of KYC. And the rule of thumb with most hedge funds, private equity funds, whatever, is, there's not much you can do. You can't, find them and put a gun to their head and say, give us your updated W8.
You can compulsively redeem them if it's an open-end fund.
That's an option, right? Very rarely.
Not one that the manager likes, but yes.
No, that's an option. Generally, though, the way most people get around this, they say, okay, well, we won't do anything. And if they ever try to redeem, then we'll hold their money hostage and say, you can't redeem and you can't get your money back until we get these refresh docs. And that's kind of universally accepted. My question is, and I had this happen recently, is you have an investor, let's say it's a high risk, a PEP, a politically exposed person. They're from a high risk part of the world. Everyone's on edge. And they have old docs. They're not responding to refreshing. They don't request a redemption, but they try to add more money. Had this happen a couple of times. So the managers are generally like, yeah, we'll take the money. That's great. We love money. We'll take money. And the lawyers and the admin were like, well, they're not getting it out, so they can't be laundering it. They're getting it out. But I have concerns about that. So I'm kind of curious, how would you guys feel in that situation? So they're a client of yours, Jason. They're from a high risk.
I'll give you the legal answer.
Yeah, please.
Okay, so usually in the subscription documents, and I've never seen it not in a subscription document, there's a representation that the investor represents that nothing has changed, and in the event of a change, that they will notify the manager or the board. So the presumption is nothing has changed, so tie goes to the manager, so to speak.
Jason, what do you say?
So our position would, from our, at least from our MLRO and our AML KYC procedures, would be that the investor should not be allowed to invest in without refreshing documents. The same way at a capital call or a distribution, we would refresh KYC. So that would be our opinion. We would note it to the GP. Ultimately, the decision will be between the GP and the administrator, because we're not the administrator. But we will make our recommendation noted.
So wait, when you refresh KYC, what are you in contact with the investor?
If we need something new. So if there's something expired or deficient, absolutely. But generally, if we're doing our job, we're not hitting a point where we're doing a refresh for an event and we don't have the right amount of information.
You're just looking at AML. You're looking at these... like these lists of people that you shouldn't take money from.
Correct. So we would probably never be in that spot if we did our job intra period.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting they're on OFAC. I'm just saying that they are, they are no longer complying with the refresh. And Ron brought up a very good point, which I didn't know. That's great language, assuming it's in there. But Ron, I got to go with Jason on this, because you have a lovely, elegant, technical legal argument, I don't know how much water that carries if you get a knock on your door and it's the DOJ and the FBI saying, hey, can you explain to us why this person who we now know is guilty of the most awful offenses against humanity has been pumping money into your fund?
So DOJ knocks on the door. We know you've taken money from somebody with the last name Putin, and we know them to be a bad person. Normally, once that happens, the manager, and we've lived through this when Russia attacked Ukraine, that money got segregated.
I want to stay alive. Can we stop picking on Putin? I think he's going to be here soon. I think he's going to be hanging out at the White House. So, let's move to something else. Let's move to another villain. All right.
So you're taking money from Dr. Evil, and you find out Dr. Evil's on a list. What has happened in my experience, and there's not necessarily as clear of a path as one would think, that Dr. Evil's money would be segregated from all of the other investors' money.
Yep. Yep.
And once it's segregated, that's where I've seen differences as to, does the manager continue to invest it alongside the rest of the fund, but segregated? Does the manager stop adding positions, taking away positions, liquidating, and just lets it sit? Does the manager take it and put it into cash?
Well, I've been there. Nobody knows. Yeah.
No one knows. Nobody knows. You.
I had a fund in the BVI that one of the main oligarchs that was sanctioned, like top of the list, and everything.
Dr. Evil's uncle, we got it.
And we segregated the money, and that was all fine. That, like you said, it all was easy. Like, all right, are we allowed to like accrue interest? And that was a bit of a discussion.
Yeah, what happens if you lose the money? There's a million questions.
It's even better. It's even better. We get a phone call one day that the BVI government has taken over the account, and the BVI government wants to redeem. So as a director, my first thought is, great. That's a regarded.
I'm relieved of liability. It's a government action.
Then the U.S. lawyers turned around and said, nope. And I was like, what do you mean, nope? That's a government, a recognized government. That's not a sanctioned government. They're claiming it's their account now, and we have to give it to them. Why? What grounds do we have to deny it?
You still have a duty you owe to the investor that might be in conflict with the government's act.
It was that. It was also basically, and I called them out on this, they didn't believe that the BVI government was telling the truth. They did not believe that the investor was actually removed from the situation. They said, if you give this money to them and it turns out it's him, it will be like you gave it to him.
Yeah.
This was about 3 years ago during the peak of all the madness. It was nuts. So my point is, And these were top law firms. Like, no one knows how to handle this shit. Everyone's just winging
it. We spoke to multiple directors. We spoke to multiple law firms. The course we took was as commercially common as one could detect. But Jason, I assume you might have dealt with that in the past in your prior life in the industry. But at Sonata One, fortunately, it doesn't sound like it's a decision you have to deal with. It's between the administrator, as you said, and the manager.
Right, because we will merely, in that situation, just be presenting what we know about the investor. What information have we gathered? What have they supplied? And that's it.
So here's an interesting question, which apologies if you don't know the answer, but as we see, there's a trend towards tokenization of funds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in the BVI, there's a closed ledger, so meaning the issuer is handling the ledger themselves anyway, which may defeat the purpose of the tokenization. But in an open ledger where Jason buys it and he wants to sell it to some other party through the tokenization, how does a Sonata or how does an administrator due diligence?
For us, it's a little bit of uncharted territory. Generally our client base are mostly private closed-ended funds that are buying companies or lending money. So we're admittedly a little early to it. I don't really have a great answer for you, frankly, that wouldn't come across as me fibbing to you. But at the heart of it, the information around verifying who the investor is still the same. So until someone changes the type of information required, we still fit into that ecosystem. So I don't see anything that precludes us from being the KYC passport for a transaction like that. The issue, and this may seem a little amateur, but I'll take my best shot at it, is we're merely being asked to provide a passport that articulates who this investor is, are they accredited, are they approved, and what information led us to that decision.
And to be clear, when you use the term passport there, that's different from obviously a U.S. passport or a government passport. You're talking about basically a file on this person that can move with them from investment to investment across administrators, across fund managers, across geographies. I have my kind of golden ledger of who John D'Agostino is. And the next time I want to invest in a fund, I don't have to go through all that crap again. I can just click a button. And because they trust you, or because you're the gold standard, they're going to believe that the file you have on me will pass regulatory scrutiny. And I can invest in that fund without having to fill out all those docs again.
Correct. And we've had to go through, we've had conversations with folks like SEMA about a passport. It's basically
Cayman
like
Island. That's the Cayman Island Regulatory Authority.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Cayman Island Monetary Authority. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so wait, one other question then, and then I want to get into predictions. Have you found demand by the investors and not the managers, where the investors are big enough that they say, look, I don't want to keep going through all this. We want to go through Sonata One. Mm-hmm. We want to put pressure on our managers to adopt it and have you engaged by the funds.
Absolutely. Yes. The answer to that is yes. Think about it. If you've had to do it enough and you're sufficiently irritated. And listen, an LP is free to come to us outside of a GP directing them to us. And it happens where they'll ask to create a Sonata One passport for the benefit of giving it to an administrator as part of their subscription process.
All right. So let them take a sip. Why don't we go with some short term predictions, not including any like competitive sports, but really more on the industry. Short-term, long-term predictions of what you're seeing and also based on your career, since you have a very storied, amazing career.
The overarching easy one is regulatory pressure stays fairly consistent. But this FinCEN rule, oddly enough, I think
when you talk about FinCEN rule, you got to give people background so they know what you're talking about.
So as it pertains to Sonata One, the requirement of KYC policies and procedures and an active refresh on those. I see people not taking it very serious, or at least not worrying about it now. When there's something that's ascribed a deadline, generally, I know me personally, I take it seriously. So for the people in the ecosystem that perform this work, what we worry about is the ability to have the bandwidth. And so I think the private funds community needs to get fairly serious about putting these policies and procedures and work in. For some reason, people aren't paying much attention to it, no matter
how many
people.
So you're saying the FinCEN rule, like what specifically?
Specifically, as it pertains to a KYC policy and procedure as a general partner, an RIA. So if you're a registered investment advisor, you've got to have a KYC program in place. And I'm oversimplifying it. But the reality is you have to be able to articulate what you do to make sure that an investor is accredited, source of funds, and that, again, back to our Putin conversation, he's not the underlying beneficial owner coming into your fund. That has to be documented, and you have to have policies.
So what's the prediction?
I think the deadline might get extended.
I mean, Jason, the reason nobody takes it seriously, I'd say nobody takes it seriously. Firms do take this seriously. There's a tremendous amount of red tape around this. But the reason I think maybe that firms are not as taken as seriously as you might think they should, and same reason they didn't take AIFMD as seriously as one thought they should, it's because there's never really been an example of a firm getting slapped around for this.
For the listener, AIFMD stands for the Alternative Investment Fund Managers Directive, which came out of the EU, which sort of made it harder for non-EU based managers to go around raising money and accepting investment from EU residents.
Right. So the SEC comes in, they do their annual inspections, they do their audits occasionally. They tend to care more about disclosures and fund documents. We just haven't seen a scenario where a fund manager has been raked across the coals by like the DOJ or the FBI, where they're saying, hey, because you have sloppy AML practices, you are putting this country at risk because you are potentially allowing in really, really bad foreign actors to launder money through your fund. We just haven't seen that yet. So until we do, I think everyone's going to do the business case. They're going to say, okay, how much money should I invest in this? How many people should I hire? Given that, you know, my lawyer tells me there's never been a scenario where this has happened. So my prediction is that's going to happen at some point, that a hedge fund manager is going to go to jail because they had sloppy AML practices, and then you'll see a tremendous amount of investment in this
Let me tweak it. If you're going to modify it, I don't think it's a first glance somebody's derelict, because they're going to have some things, barring somebody running a fund from their basement and living under a rock and having closed caption TV and no communications with the public, they're going to have something in place. And whenever you mentioned somebody going to jail, it's a recidivist. It's somebody who's been warned, somebody who's been beaten over the head that just sort of says, yeah, sorry, I don't care who you are, federal government. You have no jurisdiction over me. What, any long-term predictions? Or is that it? Is that all we're getting out of the soothsayer McClinsky today?
I mean, long-term is long-term. I mean, in our business, we tend to focus relatively short because
Do you see the family office industry or the high net worth industry coming back and playing a major role in the alternative space? Because post 2008, what's really changed the dynamic is it became more institutional investor based. And as a result, it's a small number of the largest funds have garnered most of the industry's assets.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you ever ignore the family office contingent, because so much wealth has been created in this country over, call it, the last decade, that, look, we're talking to several like multifamily offices about how we can help them invest. And you know, you have to remember, a firm like ours, when we talk KYC, I am not only speaking about KYC for LPs, for family offices and general partners, they also receive a ton of inbound KYC from their counterparties. And so we do KYC, inbound KYC management for family offices and general partners. The CFOs at these funds, it is irritating beyond belief the number of KYC requests they get from their counterparts. And for family offices, when they're investing in managers, deal KYC. So we'll actually go look at an investment and do that same underlying work. And just last week, we had two inquiries from multi-billion-dollar family offices to do KYC on principles of funds they're investing in and on one specific asset. So you can't rule them out. And we have a number of them on in our community. I don't even want to say platform because it's not. It's more community.
All right. Well, Jason, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure. I think what you're doing is very, very needed in the industry. And I'm hopeful that the growth you're experiencing will continue. And we can get some kind of order amongst all this chaos with regards to private fund investments. So thanks for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jay.
My pleasure.